This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's now time for Sensing Bros, a program with a focus on youth well-being.
This program is about natural buzz. There's a group of us brothers who are living alcohol and drug free, and we want to share our stories and celebrate the things that are going right in the world. There's a lot of negativity. We're about positivity. We come from diverse cultural backgrounds, Samoan, Tongan, Maori, and we just want to share them.
All right, bro. Thanks, man. Thanks. And Sensing Bros, here we go. Rah, I'll just ask you, please, to just introduce yourself the way you want to.
O te hei Māori ora, ki te whai ao ki te ao marama, he mihi whakawhetai tēnei ki a koe tōku ariki, kei te mihi tonu. Kia rātou mā ngā tini hongamate, tētai te whakauru mai ki tēnei kaupapa miharo. Hoki atu rā e moi, e hoki hoki. Kei oku manukura, oku tātā ariki, oku rangatira o te motu. Tuku atu rā kia inoi ki o mātua nui o te toi o Ngārangi. Tēnei toku mihi. Tēnei tuku wero ki a koutou. Nō reira, tēnā koutou. Tēnā tātou katoa. Ko wai au. Uiri tēnei no Ngāti Kahunu. Ngāti Tūwharetoa me Ngāti Maniopoto Hoki. Ko rāwiri Maniopoto Ahau. Ko te maua e tūmai rā ko kahurānaki. Ko te awa e pūheke ana ko Ngāriororo. Ko te waka e hoi mai nei ko tākitimu. Nō reira, tēnā koutou. Kahuri. Tēnā koutou katoa.
Oh, mahalo.
Mahalo uso.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm excited to talk, really, because I know a little bit about your journey, and your story. And Sensing Bros is all about natural buzz.
Nice.
You know, it's how we get to that place where we're just satisfied with life, but we're working hard as well, and we're not confused about what we're here for and what we're doing, eh?
Yeah.
But where do you want to start with your journey? Because it's pretty amazing, eh?
Where do I start?
Yeah, where do I start? Well, years and years ago, God thought of me. That's where Talia started, eh?
Yeah.
As
I just said, in Te Reo Māori, just a little bit of translation. I know the audio doesn't put through subtitles.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, but we're working on it, eh? Yeah. Like in neon, you know. Yeah. 3D, eh?
No subtitles.
No, right? Yeah.
But basically, you ought to hear me speak in my native tongue, Te Reo Māori. So whenever, I guess, I get an opportunity to speak, whether that's at a formal event, whether that's in a pai pai setting at the marae, whether that's at a 21st birthday for family, a church event, some sort of gathering that's quite significant, I tend to lean towards starting off in my native tongue. And people ask me, why do you always start in Te Reo? Well, for me, a little bit like you said about Talia, the journey for me with the Lord started with the Lord chasing down my people. So you know, I've shared a lot about this sort of idea and I guess kaupapa Māori around where do I stand in this world today as a Māori but also as a European.
Yeah.
Where do I find my tūranga waiwai? Is it explicitly in Te Ao Māori, kaupapa Māori, all things Māori? Is it explicitly in Te Ao Pākehā, in Te Ao Tauiu? Is it in education? Is it in the gaining of things like business and these things that never really were a part of Te Ao Māori?
Right.
Or do I find myself somewhere in between? And so I sort of sit in that niche of I'm in between, you know, and I guess my journey started from when the Lord and the relentless love of God chased down my people over 2,000 years ago. Now, I'm not much of a historian, but I do like history. And I do know when that started over 2,000 years ago, the love of God, how much he loved the world when he gave his only son.
Mm-hmm.
On their cross, hundreds of thousands of kilometres away from the shores of New Zealand, the shores of the Pacific Island, the shores of the islands, all internationally, the relentless love of God started there when Jesus died for the people of this world. And that love travelled through those disciples, through those people, you know, the history, I guess, of the whakapapa of where the love of God came and ended up on the shores of Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud.
You weren't raised. You weren't raised at all in the church.
No, bro, not at all. I was raised in and around the things of the church as such.
Yeah.
More Māori kaupapa, really.
Yeah.
So I guess a little bit of background, and I'll touch back on what I sort of just started. That's where I want to start from. But
just
a little background of myself. I guess I should have went there first. So yeah, my name is Ra, but my Māori name is Rawiri.
Yeah.
People just know me as Ra. So yeah, my name is Rawiri Zan Lee Maniapoto, and I hail from, I was brought up in Hastings, in Here Tonga, but I was born in Whanganui. So I was born on the west coast and raised in the east coast under a loving mother, and I know a loving dad, but in his own way. So he was patched up for the mob. Mongol mob, and so I grew up under that lifestyle. Uncles all in the mob life, all of that lifestyle was all around me, and it was just a normality for me, you know. And if I say anything that might seem like I'm belittling my father, or in any way, you know, during this time, it's actually not the case. It's to bring up the fact that these things were real for me. These feelings of unforgiveness and bitterness that came around my life, and you know, wrapped around me. And the void of him leaving when I was 8, you know, all those types of things, you know, that's not on him. That was on me, you know. And one of the sayings that I live by now is to forgive is to set a prisoner free and realize that the prisoner was you.
It's good, man. It's really good.
For much of my life, I lived like that towards my father. How could my dad had brought me up in the Mongol mob lifestyle? How could he always have his friends over coming in his V8 cars? How come he didn't look after my mother the way that he should have? How come he always beat me up? How come I had steel caps in my back? How come I always had hidings and black eyes, and mum always did too? How come he was never there to tell me that he loved me? How come he didn't tell me when I got player of the day that I was awesome, but instead called me a dreamer? How come? Why did? Why was this happening? And for most of my life, I carried that stuff, eh? And when he left when I was 8, I had this void. I had this unforgiveness, bitterness, and void of, I just wanted to be loved. I just wanted to be told that I'm awesome and I'm loved. So I went looking for it. So I went searching in drugs, alcohol, girls, parties, and identity, and scholarships as well, and schooling, and sport. I went searching for it, and I only came up more empty the more I searched. And all I was looking for was the love of the father, the love of my dad. So sort of cutting a long story short there, 2009, the love of God chased me down. I was in the nightclub.
yes, you are, right?
Yes. And but that's part of my story. I can share a little bit about that later.
Yeah.
But I guess it was just normalities, eh?
Yeah.
You grow up with normalities. Teenage life, you grow up around that and you just think partying, sleeping around, having a good time, you're young, let's do that.
Yeah.
But it's actually such a misconception, eh?
Yeah.
It's actually really...
Well, there's something, you discovered that life that's better, eh?
Yeah.
More satisfying. But in that time, yeah.
I was looking for it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find it. Find it. Yeah, it left me really empty, bro.
You know, can I ask about your dad?
Go ahead.
Like, where you've got to with your relationship with him, and you know that when he was missing, in action, so to speak, were there other father figures or people that you were looking to that sort of give you that?
Oh, 100%. I was looking for that. I was looking for that in my coaches.
Yeah.
In my trainers. I was looking for that, and because I was trying to make it in sport, just trying to look for that in my friends. So I was a young 13, 14 year old.
Yep.
When I started to really look for acceptance in males.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of them were awesome, like a lot of those coaches. So I went to Lindisfarne College in Hastings,
which is
a very oxymoron type school for someone like myself, brown skinned brother,
ending up at a very
Tawiri European school.
Wow.
You know, so red blazers.
Yeah.
So anyone Māori that went there, or Pacific Islander, they're called Jaffers. Get a picture in your
mind. Yeah, man.
Red blazer.
Nah, but you too, red, bro.
Well, that's what my dad always wore, so it's good. But, I just wore a red blazer. He wore a red patch. It's just a different lifestyle. But I did, bro. I looked for that approval in coaching and mentors.
Yeah.
And my stepdad stepped in the scene when I was around intermediate time.
Yeah.
And so he stepped in. But there was that 4 year or so space where I had to become dad at home. When dad left, he just up and left. Like,
didn't say anything. Was gone.
Mum told him, I remember the last fight that they had. Mum told him, my mum had my little sister in her arms. My older sister was right by my mum's side and I was right by my older sister's side. So they were young. I was, 7, 8. My older sister was about intermediate age, 12 or something like that. And my younger sister, she was about, must have been about 3 or 4 or something like that. And mum's standing there arguing with dad. Dad does his usual thing, physically violent, all of that. And my sister trying to run in and give him the bash. But he, pushes us to the side, kicks us around in there. And this isn't to belittle him, this was just the lifestyle that he knew, And I see that now. But back then, I was like, how could you even do something like that? And so my mum said, that's it, you're done, we're over. And I'd heard that a lot of times. Mum had said that heaps, and I was like, whatever, mum, it's going to be the same. But she called the cops, he got taken out, went to prison, and they ended up out of our lives in a way. So yeah, within that space and time when he was away for those years, dad stepped in the scene, and I didn't know if I could trust him. I was like, too many males have let me down. Not only just dad, uncles, people that I thought I could trust, let me down. And so yeah, I look for that acceptance in him as well. But again, he tried his best. Nothing wrong with what he did do. He did try to put his best in, but I was just looking for my dad to just tell me that I'm awesome. And that he had my back. So I had a lot of daddy issues, eh?
Wow, bro. Me too. This is,
nice.
Yeah, me too.
Relatable, eh?
Yeah, very relatable. I hated my dad.
Mm.
But I didn't know that's what it was. It was because I was confused because I couldn't make sense of his behaviour towards us and our family for a long time. And I also wanted to love him.
Yeah.
And I wanted him to be all right. But I didn't know. Because as a child, when you're growing up, how do you make sense of some of those behaviours that are like... But big time looking for acceptance.
Yeah. 100%.
From dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was a lot of it.
That's how I think I came and was open when I... When I, I had a supernatural encounter with God when I was young, when I was a teenager, and I heard him speak to me.
Wow.
And it was in a father's voice, and it was so warm and beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think a lot of it was because, an audible.
Wow.
Audible voice, yeah.
Powerful.
Very, very powerful. I still had to make sense and still of that, But I knew instantly that there was a father who just accepted me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what? Awesome. I wasn't even looking for it.
Mm.
It was in a... I'll come back to you, bro, because it's about you. But
that's so good. That's
they took us.
It's about us.
It is about us, bro. They took us away from
from Dunedin, a group of us, I think maybe six of us, and put us on an orchard because they just wanted to keep us out of trouble. We turned up in the courts, and then we were part of this youth group, and then they took us to a Christian man's orchard, you know, thinking that would be a place where things would get a bit quieter and we could settle and stay out of trouble for a short time, which we did. And it was Christmas, and we went to a Christmas carol service, and I was just singing carols, and I was standing there, and the boys were standing alongside me. Boom. God spoke. And wow. and what he said to me was, "Philip," just like that, "Philip," in a big, deep voice, you know. Much better than my mum. I'm trying to imitate the voice of God here, and I can't do it. Yeah, that's creepy. No. It was the most beautiful thing. Most beautiful, beautiful. I started crying, eh?
Wow.
And I'm looking, and I'm weeping, and I'm going, and I'm in this like funnel of light that you can't feel the light. I just felt heaven had broken. There's just complete no gap.
Wow.
From above, weeping, looking around, and then he says, "I love you." And I knew that because he'd called me. The first thing was Philip. The way he called me was by my name, not a you, not a anybody, just by my name.
Hey, you.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You're the one, the sixth one down the row, on the third row. The one that's not singing.
Yeah, the one that's crying right there.
That's right. I want to talk to you. But that's what happened. And then the third thing. So, and then I'm weeping even more, you know, having this experience. And then the third thing, and he says, "And I love these people as I love you." And then I'm weeping because for the sense of love that he had for people, and a lot of them didn't know it.
Mm.
And I was weeping the fact that they didn't know this love. This. Yeah. So that was an encounter that I had.
That's powerful, bro.
But it was, that's, only God could bring that, eh?
That's it.
Yeah. Anyway, it took me a long time to still think through what the impact that my father had and how we related and all that.
Mm.
Long years and years and years, bro. And I thought I'd forgiven him when I hadn't, and I was doing a lot out of obligation, the right thing, but I wasn't letting him in either. I put a wall up for a long time.
Yep. So you say the right things, but not doing the right.
But
things.
Not have the right heart. Mm. Yeah. But anyway. That's a little bit about me.
That's good, bro. It's funny you share that with, not funny, you know what I mean?
I do know.
Very interesting, because two things there that I definitely relate to is the experience of having a supernatural encounter in a place where you least expect it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And then the second thing is that whole restorative thing with Dad. So those are the two things that actually, you know, if you don't mind, I could touch on
this. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So before, I don't know what it was like for you, but before I had my encounter with the Lord, or, you know, it's funny because I say when I met the Lord, before I met the Lord, actually the Lord met me. That's how I see it.
Mm.
The Lord met me.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, and before the Lord met me and encountered me, I actually said about 3 months before, and I went to a church service, and it sounds like Christian easy. But I went to a service, and it was for youth and young adults. Pretty radical place. They heart out, love Jesus. Samoan Māori mates that had been transformed, they were all party scene sort of skucks guys, you know, that sort of scene.
Yeah.
They'd come in and gone into this new life, and I was like, oh, I was really interested. I wanted to come along. So mates like, chuck a few names out there, John Lima and Francis Tulitifunga. These types of guys, you know, they were. Well, if anyone knew Francis, he's just that guy that everybody wanted to be around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Adam Florence. These types of people that had gone into this church buzz that seemed so authentic and so real. They weren't dressing different. They were just the same. They looked like they were alive and they were free. That's what it felt like.
Mm.
From an outside perspective, you know, somebody who was bound, unforgiving, wanting life, wanting to be like that, but putting on a mask. They just look so free. So I was like, oh, I've got to go check this out. What is this all about? That night, the guy that was speaking said, if you want to know God's real for yourself, you need to ask yourself. If you really do, God will see your heart. You ask and he'll show up. I guarantee you, he will. Now, what he didn't put in the disclosure was, when he wants to show up, he will.
There was
no disclosure there. It was just that. So I 100% bought into it, and I was like, sweet, that's it. I responded to the altar call that night, and my prayer was to God, God, if you're really real, you need to show me. You need to show up. Because at that time, I was battling suicide.
Mm.
I was battling depression. I was battling unforgiveness.
Mm.
I had all of these regret, man, huge regret.
Yeah.
Because if we rewind back to the high school thing,
yeah,
I had I was at an elite high school for education. So I'd got a scholarship into that school that was paying like $3,500 a year for me to be in schooling.
Mm.
I had, in terms of my education, high, like my academic was going amazing.
Yeah.
Sporting was just, I was getting to that place. I had a bit of a name for myself in sports scenes up in Hawke's Bay.
So you were kind of like succeeding in those.
Massively, wow, in those realms. And so I had all these things back at high school that were lining up for me. And in terms of sport, you might know Israel Dak.
Yeah.
So we were bros in high school. We were mates in high school. He was sixth form when I was fourth form.
Yeah.
So he was year 12 when I was year 10. Played first 15 at year 10 at fourth form. And so, and so I had just been sort of not discovered, but had been given a contract with Hawke's Bay Development. So to progress into that.
Yeah.
And at that time, I'd been playing Hawke's Bay under 16s, under 18s.
Yeah.
Made it into junior Hurricanes teams and these types of things. So sporting was blowing off, going awesome. Well, it was because of addiction and because of me getting into the wrong circles and starting to smoke weed, alcohol, girls, all of that started around my life because I thought I was famous. I thought I'd made it.
Yeah.
I had all these contracts, had this world tour coming up for rugby, and all these opportunities, I was like, yes, I've made it. And I wasn't anywhere near it.
Mm.
But I started living the lifestyle like I was good, like I was there.
Mm.
And it caught me up. Year 10, I lost my scholarship to the school.
Mm.
I lost my scholarship to on my contract to Hawke's Bay Rugby. Lost all my sporting opportunities, all my schooling.
Were you just not turning up or something?
I just fell into this place of, I don't need to anymore. I'm good enough. I'm better than everybody in this team.
You're talented, I'm the man.
You're talented, man. But not hard work, though.
Yeah.
Oh, like I would get out there and I could notch up the training and just play mean on the weekend.
Yeah.
And I was only young kid. I was like 13, 14, and I was competing with 17, 18-year-olds.
See, that's the thing with talent, eh?
Yeah.
That's the
the
mind game that goes on when you're talented.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have my dad see around me to tell me, you get your butt in the car, get to training now. My stepdad would say, well, it's up to you, son.
Yeah.
It's up to you. That's what he would call me. My mum would go, boy, you need to get down to training. And if I said, nah, she'd just let it go.
Right.
But if I was the father, if I had my dad there, if I was the father of 14-year-old Ra, give me your ears, get in this car, let's go, we're going. Because I can see beyond where he's at. I can see, and I'd disconnect all that thing, all that stuff around him, all those things. So yeah, I lost my contract, lost my sporting ability, like my sprinting. I was in athletics and competing real high level. All of that, all of my talent as such. And actually, through losing all of that academic and sporting stuff at high school, I went to a pretty good school next.
Mm.
But I just fell deeper into addiction, smoking weed, sleeping around, alcoholism, all of that. And I brought a lot of people down with me.
Yeah, because you kind of have a leader personality, eh?
Yeah, and that's what
out front. Yeah,
and so that's where the mask started to come on. I'm good. I don't need all of that stuff. Lindisfarne College. I'm the man over here. I want to do everything I need to do.
Wow.
And you know, I was even competing, playing games against Lindisfarne, and Israel Dirk was playing first 15. And I'm like, yeah, I look forward to those games. I'm like, I'm gonna carve these up. Like I was real cocky, real arrogant, real ignorant as well. And you know, I was just real annoyed. If I was looking at,
if nobody could talk to you about that either, no one could.
But this is one of the things that really spoke to me, just quickly touching on this and then go to the part where I was, was I had a Māori mentor step into my life, right? Māori guy. And then I had my European coach, Mr. Gibb was his name, for at Lindisfarne College. At that time, while I was battling with, I needed to be showing that someone cared for me. The Māori guy that was showing up said all the right things, ticked all the right boxes, and was there for me. Was there. But I didn't feel like this person really connected to me. Even though he was Māori, same skin, same kaupapa, speak the same language, know the same stuff.
Interesting.
I just didn't connect. I didn't connect. And my European coach, who doesn't speak Te Reo, who would say kia ora and speak like this, you know, and that guy would speak into my life and I would receive it. I'd receive it. And you know what it was? Me moving into youth work not long ago, coming out of that space, was this say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Real cheesy lines. I'm a bit of a cheesy line.
No, but that's a biggie. You know,
that's exactly it.
Yeah, keep going. Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
That's in some of our Pacifica training published material, that one thing. That's what we're trying to get across to people in the field. If you engage with people from the heart,
boom,
you can start your...
Oh, yeah. People don't care what degrees you have, all of the stuff. I had these two. And so the European coach spoke into my life. I received it because I knew he cared. This guy, I knew he was just coming to tick boxes, eh? Yeah. Hinting on just the tick boxes. Mm. Looked exactly what I needed, but wasn't what I needed.
Mm.
And unfortunately, that person that was in my life became the main influence over my life. So that's where I was like, no, these guys are not even listening. I'm like, I need this coach. So that's sort of part of the reason why I started falling off the rails. Interesting, eh? So from there, from a 14-year-old all the way up to I was around just coming into 20s, 19, 20, for that six-year period.
Yeah, those years are so, whoa.
Crucial. And so in those years, those 6 years, I lived with, like I said before, regret. Huge regret of everybody in the Hawke's Bay saying, hey, bro, you could have been an All Black. People would say stuff. They still say stuff like that to me today. Bro, you should have been. You could have been, you would have been, those types of things.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I remember listening in on a conversation one time. I was at the marae, and my wife, at the time, was just my partner. I was about 16, and I'm at the back cleaning in the marae, and I can hear my wife's nan and her nan group, and they're in there and they're talking. And I overheard their conversation, and they said, oh, it's real a shame about that boy, eh? You know, he could have really been something awesome. He could have really been something great. You know, what a shame. And so that weight, that stuff was on my shoulders all the way through. Actually, not till I was just 19. That was all the way through even after I got saved. Till, like, I'm talking only a few years ago when the
Lord... How old are you now?
28. Right? So I was around 25 when I fully got delivered from regret, bro.
Yeah, it takes time to work that stuff out, eh?
Yeah, so back to the time where I said the Lord, you know, make yourself real because I'm depressed, I'm in suicide, living with these regrets, I'm bound up, I've got all of this stuff, and I'm going to call it quits. If you don't show up, I'm done. You need to show yourself that you're real to me. I waited that night, extra waited at the altar for God to show up.
Yeah.
He did it, and I was like, no. Oh, I'll give you a bit more time. I gave him a couple of days, gave him a couple of weeks, gave him a few months, and then I ended up being like, this is all rubbish. This is all rubbish. I told the boys, like Francis, and that what you believe in is rubbish, bro. He's a brainwash. That's why he's all clean. There's no God, mate. There's nothing. Wow. Went on road trips, fell back into my old lifestyle. I tried to live clean, but it was really just religion.
Yeah.
But so I went back to my old lifestyle.
Yeah.
And in that lifestyle, I was in a nightclub, centre of Christchurch City. Right by the strip, Cafe Bleu. Now, for anyone that's listening, they know Cafe Bleu was the spot where all of the East Siders would usually congregate. So it was a very indigenous type feel of a nightclub. And so I'm at the bar, and the bartender, I just asked for a beer, Woodstock. So actually, still remember what it was. And I remember it coming across, straight across and in front of me. It's like a movie, really. And at that time, I heard a voice straight into everything that I am. Is this the life you want to live? And just much like yours,
wow,
bro. Is this the life you want to live? And I looked at that bottle and I was like, whoa. I thought I was just drunk. So I was like, oh, good, scold back the drink. And I was like, whoa, tripping out here. What's going on? Go to the dance floor, start dancing with, you know, as you do, dance around. Ended up with this lady, and I was dancing, and again, woof, is this the life you want to live? And the lust. So the first one, the alcohol. Second one was the lust. And so I was like, I need to get some fresh air. Went outside. My mate's out the back smoking a big joint. Go over, you know what's going to happen here. It's a setup. It's a setup from the start. God's just set me up, hasn't he? Woof. Is this the life you want to live? As I smell smoke coming out of my nose. Exhaling. The addictions. And I said to my bros, I think I've been spiked. I'm tripping out. I'm hearing voices. I don't know what's going on, but I've got to get out of here. So I got out of the nightclub. We end up in this rumble with these guys right outside on the strip, having a fight. Boom, 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 boom. Getting one over on this guy. I'm getting punches to the face. And, you know, I'm not much of a rumbler. I wasn't really back then either, you know. I was the one that usually got the boys in trouble, and we ended up in a fight. We end up in this fight. And I'm on top of this guy, and I'm just bang, pounding, pounding. And is this the life you want to live? Anger and hate. And I looked up at my fists, and I punched the ground so many times that my fist knuckles had been ripped back. And I got off, and by then the cops were, they had rolled up. So we were off, I got away. My mates didn't get away. I found out later on that they didn't. They got snapped. But I got away quickly. It's pretty quick. And ended up going home, and I nabbed the girl from a club. See, it was a real ugly lifestyle, right? Not something I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
Took her home, and woke up in the morning, and with a hangover. Is this the life you want to live? A hangover, and then everything from that night. Right next, and I just said to that girl, I need to go to church. I need to go to church. I just knew. So I went to church that Sunday. Went to the service, sat at the back, hungover, smelling like alcohol, feeling like I was getting judged by everybody sitting at the back. Preacher, right at the end of the service, calls the altar call. Calls the altar call, second time around in the years. I just really feel like there's somebody in here, and God's telling me to tell you, is this the life you want to live? Points out everything. The alcohol, the drugs, the lust, the hate, the addictions, everything. Just lays it flat out. And something in me while I was standing there doing altar call was like, this is so me. My feet felt like they wanted to move. I was like, this is for me. And my heart's beating. And I just pretty much ran to the front, really. Ran to the front of the altar call and responded to God. And this was the last piece that, the second to last piece that really spoke to me was, I'm standing at the altar. I knew that God had supernaturally come into the nightclub, met me, pulled me out, brought me to that place, and then confirmed things. I closed my eyes, and I just said the prayer of salvation, repented of my ways, and laid it down to God. And the vision that I had when I closed my eyes, I had an open vision of the Father with his arms wide open. You know, no voice, no audible, nothing too spiritual or anything. Just God with his arms wide open for me. The Lord with his arms wide open. And that just ripped everything inside me, just like, tore everything, like, damn, this is what I always needed. And I opened my eyes, and all of the boys were around me ready to pray. And that's what us needed, was support the brotherhood. That was 2009, March 26, 2009. The Lord encountered my life, and from there, I felt a huge weight lift off my shoulders. And I still had process, though, you know?
Yeah, because
you... That's my story,
Did you find, because this is what I found over time, that that part of our process is to start uncluttering what's been going on, all the other chatter.
Yeah.
And we learn, we need to reflect and to learn. On what matters most.
Yes.
Yeah, but still having to deal with some of those overhanging feelings of insecurity and rejection. And because I found it hard, really hard. Like, I've been in a lot of different places, and when I finally found my way back into church, it was like after 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, but I was still, and
It was, I'm so glad I have, you know. I didn't actually think there would be any place for me.
Yeah.
But I found my home.
Yes.
You know, I did have this long experience where I had this amazing encounter with God, and I knew a lot of Christians, but I never really understood church as a family and being planted. I always felt that I was on the outside of it.
Mm.
Years and years and years of that, and, you know.
Mm.
And then I just gave up on it. And then I just had a bad attitude towards Christians and Christianity. Wow. Like a lot of my,
yeah.
you know, they,
yeah,
too,
yeah, yeah.
they're either too smart to yeah. consider God or too smart for God, or they have this very small view of Christianity, history, church,
yeah.
the gospel. They have a very, very small view of God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't recognize how amazing the, yeah. And... You know, the mysteries of God are worth searching out.
I think that's it too, the mystery of it. Like,
yeah.
theologically, it doesn't make sense that God would come to a nightclub.
Yeah, yeah.
And show up the way that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
And speak to me. And like I said, it wasn't as such a, is this the life you want to live, like your experience?
Yep.
But I knew yep. now it's the Holy Spirit speaking into my wayua,
yep.
into what, who I was. And I've never actually had an audible voice, bro. That's why I said, that's powerful. An audible voice coming in and saying, Philip.
I know.
You know, and I wasn't, man. Philip. Not the creepy one, eh, but.
Yeah.
Audible, though, like, that's powerful. You know, and I didn't have that experience. I just knew in my mind that's what was getting said to me. That's what was coming into me and speaking into that moment. And you know what, like you said about the journey, since that day, 2009, it was within a year space where God had fully transformed my life, transformed a lot of behaviors, a lot of things, taken me out of, you know, yeah. even having the desire to drink and party and go out anymore and super around and be old as such, you know, and really dealt with my pride and my arrogance and all my cockiness and all that in that space within that year. He done a real quick work within me. And I believe that was for a purpose for me to be used fully to the extent, you know, he taught me things like about fasting and praying and pushing in, and it was in that little short space of a year.
Yeah,
and I still had the journey with things like unforgiveness and bitterness, right? And I still had the journey with smoking weed and my addiction,
yeah.
you know, things like pornography, bro,
yeah.
still, yeah. you know, tainted yeah. my life.
Yeah.
And so there were these things that I still had the journey with, and these are things that still come knocking on the door today. They still try and come back, things like pride and arrogance and lust and
yeah.
these types of, they still come around. And so what do I do with that? How do I? So what actually part of the thing while God was processing, pulling out the pride,
yeah.
pulling out the arrogance and pulling out the cockiness, all that stuff, he actually brought me to a place when I was in a house that I was staying in. I'd been saved within a year, and the Lord came into my room when I was praying one night. Holy Spirit just came and flooded my room.
Mm.
I'm talking, I said, God, I feel like I've got a cap over my life. I want you to come and remove it and help me to break up from this. And it was a sincere prayer. There was nothing technical. It was just so simple and sincere. And it was like I was talking to my mate, can you just take this off? Just give me a hand, please.
Yeah.
I need it. I need some more of what you're doing. Holy Spirit enters my room. You need to forgive your father. Straight into my word.
Wow.
And I just broke down crying. And he gave me a picture of my dad.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, how can I? After everything that's happened. And he said, you need the Spirit of God. You need to. And I speak to him like he's here. And I said, something along the lines of, Dad, I forgive you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Mm.
I forgive you.
Mm.
And I'm sorry for wanting to kill you. Because this is what was in my heart. I'm going to kill you one day. That was in my heart. I want to slit your throat. As ugly as that sounds, I want to do anything it takes for what you've done to me, mum, my sisters, what you've done to us. I want to kill you one day. I told him to, one day I want to kill you. And whatever, you little...
Bro, I went to kill my dad. I was in my early... I think I was 30. And I thought about it all night. For the same reason as you...
Wow.
You know, one day I'm going to, for all the suffering you've caused, I'm going to put you out of your misery and nobody's going to care. Mm. And I got in my car and I was driving out to do it, and then I got God intervened again supernaturally.
See, it's all about Sensing Bros is about the supernatural.
Supernatural.
Yeah. It's so we can talk about it, you know, these real things.
Yes.
Just the feeling came over me, and I broke down and cried, and it was like something was breaking.
Wow.
And I pulled over, turned the car around, drove back, and knew something had broken. But
wow.
But it, you know, I still did the bits and pieces, like taking him to hospital and doing all that sort of stuff after that. Yeah. And I was training to be a counsellor.
Wow.
I know. At the same, this turmoil that was going on inside, wow. And all came to a head. And but it was a year after we buried him. We cremated him. That I actually ended up forgiving him. It was a year after.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there was another supernatural event that happened.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Another, which I won't say.
And it's
yet,
supernatural though.
But it was another supernatural event that happened when I was in a... It was after I'd spoken at a conference on the Pacific Church and alcohol-related harm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's supernatural though.
It was supernatural. So, you know, there's something about you can know things.
Yep.
But I'm, you know, in our field, in the field that we work,
yep.
A lot of practitioners, and it's really dominated by a secular worldview.
Yes.
So they can't even enter into this kind of conversation.
Yeah,
that's right. They're almost afraid to.
Yeah.
But this is really the moments where we go back and we look back on life and we say, thank you.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't have done that bit without him.
Yeah, that's right.
You know.
You would have taken for that new place.
Yeah, but he didn't take it away from us. Hey, he says, we've got to walk this way. I'll walk with you.
That's it.
But then he also helps us when it gets too much.
Yeah.
Because
what would... It's not like a hospital. Because there's just a section and let you go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a journey of... You know what I mean? It's that journey of facing the stuff. Because if he sets you free...
Ah, freedom. There you go. You know, that's the buzz.
That's the buzz there. If he sets you free, like, for example, I give my heart straight away to God. He sets me free from everything.
Yeah.
What kind of testimony do I have for somebody that's struggling with pornography or lust or anger or pride or hate towards their father? Yeah. What kind of testimony do I have?
Yeah.
I can't say I've overcome anything. All I can say is I came to the cross and Jesus took everything.
Yeah.
That's not going to help anybody that needs... That encounter is important. I'm not taking anything away from that. But the walking out of me giving my father the freedom and actually myself the freedom from unforgiveness, it's massive. That moment that I said to my father in that room, I forgive you. And I said, I forgive myself. And I said, God, I ask for your forgiveness.
Wow.
No one was there to lay hands on me. It's just me.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit's just me and God. Nobody was there. Boom. You seen Green Mile?
Yeah.
You seen the locusts come out of?
Yeah.
What happened in that bedroom? My bedroom was a small bedroom, little like 10 by 5 meter bedroom. It was this little, tiny little thing. And I started choking it after I said, I forgive and ask for forgiveness. I hit the deck on my knees, face to the ground, like I just got planted. And I just choked and choked and choked and choked and choked. And it was like locusts. From Green Mile were coming out.
Yeah.
And you know, God was saying, I'm bringing it, unforgiveness. And I just started choking, and it was just supernatural deliverance by the Holy Spirit delivering me from unforgiveness. And after I finished choking, I just cracked up laughing, and I just laughed, and I just got up. There was no band there to play for me, no music playing, and I just jumped around my room and sang God praises and jumped around in this little small space.
Mm. Mm.
See, and so when God comes in supernaturally like that, that's what happens. Well, the lady that I lived with comes up to the door. This old lady, that she helped me out to get into a place, knocks on the door. Are you all right in there, Yeah, no, I'm good, I'm okay. So I could hear you choking and screaming, and now you're laughing and jumping around. Is everything okay? What are you smoking in there? I'm just going to free you.
I think what happens for people is, again, that because they have a very small picture of what God can do and where he talks to us.
Yeah.
Hey,
like, in my bedroom in Aldershot Street, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's where God came in and touched me. Cafe Bleu, Christ Street City.
Yeah.
very limited views.
Yeah.
Well, what's to say God can't speak to a young kid in the carols?
Yeah.
Christmas party.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where he can speak wherever he wants. He can do whatever, he's sovereign, you know?
Yeah.
And so the freedom that I've got, brother, is, you know, the freedom that I've got is, it's amazing. My relationship with my father, that night I rang up my dad and told him the life that I'm living.
I said,
Dad, look, my life's changed. Oh, when the conversation went something like this. Hey, Dad, it's Ra. Yeah, hey, Dad, it's Ra. Something like this. Oh, who's this? It's your son, it's Ra. I'd spoken to him since the time he left.
Mm.
You know, I've spoken to him once after that, but it'd been years.
Mm.
Oh, is this you, my son? Hey, it's me, Dad. How you doing? All good? All that small talk sort of stuff. And I said, I just wanted to ring you, Dad, and just let you know, you know, my life's changed now. You know, I'm walking with God now, Dad. He's like, oh, good for you. So like a reluctant, good for you sort of thing. And I said, yeah, and I just wanted to tell you, Dad, that, you know, I forgive you, Dad.
Wow.
The phone went quiet.
Wow.
And I told him, you know, I love you, Dad. And, you know, I'm sorry, Dad, for feeling the way that I did towards you. He's quiet. He's quiet. I said, I just want to tell you I love you and hope you're all good. Couple of sniffs.
Mm.
On her side.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And he goes, oh. Oh, far out, son. No. I've got to go. Look, I've got to go, son. I've got to go. Hangs up the phone. Hardened Mongol war member. He didn't look like much, but his heart was very hard and he was very abusive.
Mm.
So to get a phone call like that, and I didn't really know what to do, and then I ended up calling him back not long after, and he's like, I'm so sorry, son. No one's ever said that to me. No one's ever said that to me. And he said, you know, I don't deserve it. I don't deserve your forgiveness, son. I don't deserve it for what I did to you, fellas. Son, I don't. I said, Dad, and I love you, and I forgive you, and you're free, Dad. Be free. Be free from it. My life's changed. And I started preaching to him. Yeah. Jesus changed my life, Dad. He can do the same for you. He loves you too, Dad. And that was just one of those moments where I felt such a peace. You know, people ask me how I can be so forgiving of others. It's because I've forgiven the one that I hated the most.
Mm.
Mm. I've been able to forgive the one that I hated the most. So the freedom I have today, the freedom I have the ability to forgive just like that, the drop of a hat, is all because of what God's done between my father and me, that restoration. And so to this day, I texted him to come to my wedding. Unfortunately, he didn't come. That was a bit of a hard moment where it brought up a lot of feelings for me on my wedding day when Dad didn't show up.
Mm. Wow.
So, I was like, there's still that feeling there.
Mm.
There's still feelings there, right?
Yeah.
But the forgiveness, I'm like, it's not mine to carry. It's not my dad's either, you know, I still love him. Texted him the day my son was born. Rang him, let him know. And he texted and actually rang back not long after. And how proud he was. The man I've become. Super proud of me. You know, all those types of things. Now I'm glad you didn't turn out like me, son. So our relationship's been restored.
Yeah.
So freedom, bro.
Beautiful, man.
Freedom.
Beautiful. I didn't have your courage yet. I couldn't talk to Dad. I could not bring myself to say, to have that conversation with him.
Mm.
And so, I carried a regret, hey.
Wow.
I carried a regret. And as I stopped, and as I began to look at his life and understand it a little bit more, because I didn't know my dad, I began to realize, rather than hating on him, as I'm changing, as I got more secure in God's love, I realised that I regret I hadn't been a better son, and then I had to forgive.
Wow.
And then I had to find the forgiveness.
Wow, that's interesting, bro.
For not being a better son. Eh?
Wow.
I know, but I never. And so I thought the courage for a son to talk to his dad when there's been massive rejection and say that is
I think it's one of the most powerful messages for being in our situation.
Mm.
You know, while you've got the opportunity, you can. You can.
Wow, that's so good, Phil. That's right, bro. So I never looked at it like that.
Yeah.
Because I was just so young and zealous and I'd do anything God wanted me to do then.
Yeah.
You want me to ask for forgiveness from mates that I have bitterness against when I'd be at the gym?
Yeah.
God's like, you need to forgive that. But I'll wake up and say, bro, I'm sorry, bro. All these years I hated you. So imagine beautiful. What the prison has to take on.
That's beautiful.
Well, this is the big thing with the people that we love, eh, and work with, you know. There's a lot of unresolved.
Yes.
You know, parental stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. But that's ultimately where we want people to be. But there's another step too. Like I remember being afraid I was going to be like my father and make my children feel the way I did.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had no one to talk to about that fear. You know, because I thought even if I talk to somebody about it, it's going to make it real. So I had this dual thing going on. I really don't want to make my kids feel like I do about their dad, but I don't know how not to. So I did it. I ended up doing a parenting course and all that, but with Talia and Sophie, and it's really important and that we become like you have. You know, if you resolve that stuff, then it frees us up to be the dads, because we're the men that we want to be with our kids, eh?
Yes.
Frees up us in so many ways in terms of all our communication.
Oh, 100%.
What we've got, what our dreams for them.
Yes.
See, we're not going to be the dads at the end of our lives that says, I never wanted you to be like me. We're the dads that say, you're just like...
you're just like me.
Yeah, so, and on that note, you know, because... I married my beautiful wahine, hira moana,
maikaputa.
We've had four boys. This year, 2018, they are 2, 4, 6, and 8.
Wow.
So my youngest is Kairo Nepiapatu. There's a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, Eli Tirangi, 6-year-old, Zion Ray, and the 8-year-old is Kauri or Kawari. And each of them represent a significant part of our journey with the Lord.
Wow.
So Calvary, the meaning of his name, was the redemption. Beautiful. Was the place of redemption where at the foot of the cross.
Yeah.
You know, even though it means skull of Golgotha,
yeah.
The redemption. Zion Rain meaning the place where we step into now, the victory.
Mm.
Eli Tirangi means to ascend to the heavens. Eli Tirangi. And Kairo is Cairo. Like Te Reo Māori, and Kairo means conqueror.
Wow,
so
man.
All of them are very strong, significant parts of our lives as a married couple when wanting to put that in. So I see dreams and aspirations for them every day. You know, every day. They've so got so many different personalities. Like how you said, what we've seen with our fathers, that stops. The generational line stops at us. The curses stop at us. They're not on us. Yeah. They're not on us. But they're stopped out of the curse and into the blessing. So none of our kids get that. None of our kids have the curse.
No.
So, you know, that's the other side of the freedom.
Yeah. Whānau ora. That's the real whānau ora, They're beautifully named, man.
Ah.
You know, as you were talking, I was just thinking, they're going to grow with the security of purpose. They're going to grow in that space where, you know, where we didn't...
Yeah, we didn't get in.
Yeah.
We're just
drifting around. I'm like, oh, I got it this time. I'm going to keep going, eh?
Go. We had no one say, you suck at that.
Yeah.
Do this.
This might be
more... Yeah, for you.
For you.
No. It's quite funny because just quickly to touch on that, our older son, Kawari, he is he's multi-talented, so he's good at a few things.
Mm.
He plays Ripper, so I went to his Ripper for tag football. He's flopping all over the place, trying to get tags, and he's just like, oh, clumsy ass, tripping over his own feet. But he's trying, he's making an effort. So afterwards, I was like, son, good on you for your effort, you know, good on you for trying, son. I still love you, you know, you're not that great at flag, let's be honest. He's like, yeah, I know this, I know that. I'm like, but you're still giving it a go. He's like, I'm still giving it a go, that's all that matters. That doesn't matter. Yeah, and so my other cool, son's, man. My other son's a carver, Zion. He's yep. fast, stepper, yep. quick hands, thinker. Like, he's good. Eli as well. Connor was a little bit of a player. But then we go to switch to basketball the next day. So he's playing basketball as well. We go there, and I was there at his game, and I was like, you know, son, just put your best out on the court. Just like to put your best out. And so I hadn't seen him play. It was his first game officially within Cal Stadium, and an official game with his uniform and everything. Yeah. So, nice, so proud, even him nice. Being there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what do you know? From the tip-off, catching every ball, shooting from three-point line, dribbling past people, diving at balls with someone else, gun, full noise. And I'm like, yes! He gets player of the day. He gets the only bucket of the day and gets player of the day. After the game, I said, this is where you're meant to be. So, on the court. Let's keep you if you want to keep playing tag, or I'll keep helping you there. But we've found what you're good at. We found your calling, son.
Yes. Yes.
So it's quite funny. You know, nice. It's quite funny. So, and he's academic as well. Mm. Loves reading, loves spelling.
Mm.
They're also different. But like you said, security of purpose.
Mm. Mm. They know where home is. They know we're always in their corner, eh?
Yes.
You know? Whereas
yeah, awesome.
Always in their corner.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hey, there's other things I really want to ask.
Yeah.
Right. But we'll do another.
Yeah, I'm using we'll the another, talking minutes.
No, we'll have another chat, only because this show's only like an hour.
Yeah.
But we'll pick it up because just because it's encouraging, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I mean, the major thing in my life is to be a good dad, eh? We'll do part two another time, eh? But music, I was going to... Yeah, do you have a song do you want to recommend?
Oh, yeah, so one of my favourite songs at the moment, one of my favourite artists at the moment is Tori Kelly.
Yeah.
So she's got a new album at the moment. She's got a new album that I'm really... My wife and I love listening. You know Tori Kelly?
I'm pretending I do.
No, I was sitting there with my conscience going, shall I tell him I don't know? So you freed me from asking.
So her new album is Hiding Place. And so she's a secular artist, but she's a Christian. So she's moved into the space now where she's made a gospel album with Kirk Franklin.
There's a theme tune that we use that I've always liked called from the Black Eyed Peas.
Yep.
You know, and it's all about that. You know,
yeah.
It's just asking the questions. Yeah. Where's the love? But help us to love is that's it, eh? That's
yeah, yeah. It's a real gospel focus, beautiful. strong message song. So yeah, Tori Kelly, help us to love.
Okay, that's us. Begging for change.